Welcome to All Things New Orleans, WWNO's radio magazine, where we look at the people, issues, events, and culture that make our region unique. I'm Paul Mawson. Thanks for joining us. Coming up on the show, we're going to hear from Mayor Mitch Landrieu, his State of the City address. We'll take excerpts from the speech. And also a new chamber music festival that'll be in town. But first, all this week, WWNO is exploring some of the important issues impacting quality of life and the future of New Orleans in our public affairs series, New Orleans 6 Years After. We hope to foster discussion about these issues in order to help our community. You're invited to join in the discussion. There will be a live iPhone app survey as well as discussion on WWNO.org. And on Friday morning, Dr. Ed Chervenak, the director of the UNO Research Center, will discuss the university's recent New Orleans Quality of Life report in relation to your comments. Today, our topic is stress and mental health care. One enduring legacy of Katrina is stress. Stress about home, family, money, environment, and the list goes on. But stress doesn't stay stress. It has a tendency to become other things. Eve Abrams investigates how dealing with hard situations in New Orleans helping fewer mental health patients has affected the health, safety, and future of our city.
For the last 46 years, Bill Schultz has played cello in the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. He also lives at the lowest spot on his block.
Hi, Eve.
Hey, Bill.
You can go steps or right up here if you want to jump.
Okay. Even though he was the first one back on his street, Bill wasn't allowed, legally, to elevate his house. Well, not until this month.
I've been waiting for a FEMA clearance letter for 4.5 years, which I finally got. That's it. And that now allows me to elevate.
Bill's living room wall still has a water line 43 inches from the floor. The floors buckle a lot, and they slant also a lot, from the back left corner to the right front. Walking on them made me dizzy, like I was walking up a hill. Bill lost everything when his house flooded, including his mother's Steinway piano, but it's still there in the living room.
Do you feel like you've been in limbo like these entire...
Oh, yeah, totally. Depressed last, and not only that, I was having health problems at the same time, probably due to the heart attack, which is supposed to be fine now, but I was taking
the heart attack brought on by the stress isn't what laid Bill out completely. That was the depression.
I was so weak all last year that I couldn't do anything. I mean, it was really, I just couldn't do anything except lie on that couch there and just kind of like hope things would get better, you know.
Mental health needs need to be first and foremost. You shouldn't have to have that heart attack to get the care.
Cecile Thibault is a licensed clinical social worker. For 10 years, she was the commander of the New Orleans Police Department's crisis unit, the folks who respond to 911 calls involving a mental health crisis.
And science will tell you that often stress and depression are the creators of your physiological problems. So if we can address the head early on, then maybe we won't be having all those strokes and heart attacks and suicides.
I think a good reflection to see of what a community is like is to go to your community emergency room and see what's coming in the door, because that's a last resort for a lot of people.
James Moises is an emergency medicine physician. He grew up in New Orleans, went to LSU, worked at Charity Hospital, and on the faculties at LSU and Tulane. These days, he's an ER physician at Tulane Medical Center.
We're seeing a lot more poverty, a lot more homelessness, a lot more people at the end of their rope. They can't get above water. They can't get access to care. They're having financial issues. They're having domestic issues. In my opinion, mental health issues clearly are on the rise since Katrina. Because just look at a lot of the situation for a lot of these people, whether it's people living in New Orleans East, Gentilly, neighborhoods that have not come back, they just seem like they've deflated, they've given up. And that results in depression and repetitive ER visits for different types of complaints and just hopelessness. I see that a lot, and that's what's concerning.
Cecile Thibault calls these stressed-out, depressed folks the walking well.
They're going with the motions, but the little skip in their step isn't there, or the little twinkle in their eye isn't there. They're not planning for the future. They're just living for today. And, you know, you got to worry about those folks.
For some, depression leads to medical problems. But Thibault says it can also lead to aggression.
When we talk about violence, there's two main bursts to violence. How does violence originate? We have cognitive violence, and that's a very well thought out plan. That's sort of like, you have a bike, I don't have a bike, I have a gun, you don't have a gun, so I'm going to use my gun and get your bike. Then you have emotionally born violence, and that's violence based out of fear, paranoia, anger, resentment, untreated mental illness. It's very different. And I think we have seen a lot of emotionally charged violence around here.
Before Katrina, when Charity Hospital's Crisis Intervention Unit was open, New Orleans had over 450 inpatient beds for the mentally ill. Now, at hospitals, we're down to around 60. There are 60 more in the Orleans Parish Prison. Without anywhere else to go, when someone has a mental health crisis, they go to the emergency room.
We get a lot that come in because they're depressed. So it might be a mother whose son just got killed or a child whose parent got murdered. It's not just three people got shot today. It's three people that got shot that have extended families who are now affected. And guess what? Tomorrow, another two people are going to get shot. And the next day, another person's going to get shot.
So what do you think happens to those people after they leave your care?
You know, it depends what environment they're going back home to. Are they going back to a house with no walls and no electricity? Are they alone? Do they have any kind of support system? You know, there is opportunity out there, but sometimes people need a little bit more than just opportunity. Again, we're talking about people with underlying mental illness, and they require a lot of resources. So as a society, what do we decide? Because you're paying for it one way or the other. If we don't do it on the front end, we're paying for it because they're coming to hospitals, or they're going to jails, or they're committing crimes, and society pays for it one way or another.
Moises says it's been nearly 7 years. Why can't we do better than this? Shame on us, he says. Shame on us. For WWNO, I'm Eva Grimes.
You've been listening to New Orleans 6 years After, which is made possible with major support from AT&T. AT&T committed to enriching and strengthening communities across the state. Additional support from Nola Tweetheart. Now it's your turn. We invite you to continue the discussion on mental health care online right now at wwno.org and participate in our survey by downloading the special WWNO PollBob app survey for your iPhone or iPad. Or participating online. You can do that at pollbob.com. You can hear our wrap-up report with Dr. Ed Shervinak tomorrow morning at 8:40. This is All Things New Orleans. Well, Tuesday this week, New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu delivered his State of the City address at the Mahalia Jackson Theater. In his speech, Mayor Landrieu outlined his many accomplishments since taking office, including progressive reforms to City Hall, the Recreation Department, rebuilding efforts, and the city's economic development. However, after touching upon his successes, Mayor Landrieu identified the city's serious long-term challenges and proposed a comprehensive plan to end murder and violence in the city, a strategy he calls NOLA for Life.
Now, notwithstanding all of the good things that I just spoke about, I would be remiss if I did not spend some time talking to you about our long-term challenges: pension responsibilities, major infrastructure needs, streets, sewage and water, repairs, education reform. Ladies and gentlemen, we can't keep kicking the can down the road. In the coming months, we have to continue to talk and engage with our elected officials and our business community about the responsible path forward on all of these long-term needs. We found a mess. We have made great progress, and we are beginning to move in the right direction. But, and ladies and gentlemen, this is a very big but. Every parent knows that you can only be as happy as your saddest child. And unfortunately, in this beautiful, precious city of ours, we have too many of those. And so reducing violent crime and murder in New Orleans, making New Orleans safe, has been and will continue to be the most important issue facing this city and its future. We must find a way to stop the killing. There is no greater gift that we can leave to future generations, and no challenge that is larger nor that is more imminent. And so today, I will lay out a comprehensive plan to end murder and violent crime in our city. So walk with me. Let's take a look at some hard facts. It is a sad, horrifying truth that in 2011, a John McDonough high school student was more likely to be killed on the streets of America in the city of New Orleans than a soldier fighting for our freedom in Afghanistan. Indeed, last month we had 6 murder victims who were baby-faced teenagers. Dreams deferred. Dreams denied. According to the FBI, we rank 79th for violent crime out of 274 cities. But New Orleans has the 8th most actual murders of any American city, and we are number one, ladies and gentlemen, for murders per person. And sadly, this is not a new phenomenon. Our murder rate has been higher than the rest of the country, with an average of 241 murders a year, every year, as far back as our records can count. This is unnatural. We have to stand today and say that this is unacceptable. We have to stand today and say this has to stop, and make no mistake about it, it can be fixed. There is an answer to this problem. With the help from Bloomberg Philanthropies, we have developed a comprehensive plan to attack this problem and to end murder and violent crime in New Orleans. It's called NOLA for Life, because we will end the cycle of violence and change the culture of death into a culture of life. We must change the bad to the good. This is not an impossible task. Indeed, at one time, many had given up on cities like Los Angeles, like New York, like Boston, but they dramatically reduced crime and murder. And ladies and gentlemen, so can we. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not going anywhere. We all made the decision after Katrina to stay here and to fight for the city that we love. So I need you to be with me. I need you to be with me and NOLA for Life. The pillars of NOLA for Life are really simple. First, stop the shooting. Second, invest in prevention. Three, promote jobs and opportunity. Four, improve the police department. Five, get the community involved and rebuild our neighborhood. It begins with a laser-like focus on a small number of young men who are killed and are being killed. Our message to them in word and in deed is to stop the shooting. Jobs, prevention, rebuilding neighborhoods, all very important parts of the plan. But first, you have to stop the shooting. I want you to imagine, if you will, a patient lying on the operating table, dying of a heart attack. In that moment, for that person, when the heart has flatlined, the answer is all hands on deck. It's not a healthy diet and exercise. The answer is an emergency procedure, a defibrillator sending shockwaves through the heart to make it beat. So today I'm asking every mother, every father, every brother, every sister, every pastor, every judge, every neighbor, every auntie, every teacher, every outreach worker, every friend, that ought to be all of y'all, Governor Jindal, President Obama, stand with me today. Send the message through word and deed to stop the shooting. We haven't waited. Our frontline police officers, our probation and parole agents, our federal partners are already working together. We took the Department of Justice's advice and brought them together, criminal justice leaders, social service providers, school officials, and others, to create the Mayor's Strategic Command to reduce murders. This initiative focuses our efforts on the right people in the right places to stop the shooting. We also launched Ceasefire New Orleans in Central City, and our Ceasefire outreach workers are saving lives. They're combining science and street smarts to track where the beefs are heating up and then to interrupt the violence. We've also partnered with criminologist David Kennedy, who has worked in other cities like Boston and Los Angeles, to drastically reduce murders and shootings. Kennedy's approach starts with respected elders and community members delivering a simple message, stop the shooting. Those who heed the message will be offered services and support so they can start a new life and leave behind violence. And those who don't change their ways will be held accountable with strict, predictable, and certain consequences. However, make no mistake, there is hard work ahead, but we are ready for more change, much more change. Again, we're all in this together. We're all responsible. So here's what you can do to get involved. Take the fight to the streets on NOLA for Life Volunteer Days, where city agencies and the NOPD will clean up crime hotspots. Join us as we take back the neighborhoods. Our first NOLA for Life Volunteer Day will be in July, and I'm asking you to join us. Get involved. Start a neighborhood watch. Volunteer to become a mentor at your neighborhood school. Provide a job opportunity for young people and, yes, ex-offenders. Sign up on the city's website. I hope that you will join us in changing the culture of death into a culture of life, NOLA for life. People of New Orleans, we have made great progress. We have a long way to go together. We are one team. We are one fight. We are one voice. We are one city. Let's get back to work. God bless you all, and thank you very much.
And that was Mayor Mitch Landrieu delivering his State of the City address, calling upon all New Orleanians to take part in NOLA for Life, a plan to end murder and violence in the city of New Orleans. You're listening to All Things New Orleans, WWNO's radio magazine. A brand new music celebration is garnering attention from musicians across the globe as New Orleans is now home to the Birdfoot Chamber Music Festival. We go inside the arts with Diane Mack as 3 days of concerts kick off this inaugural fest with performances this evening at the Old U.S. Mint in the French Quarter.
This is the first chamber music festival, to my knowledge, in the Gulf South region. And I find this slightly amusing because we have every other sort of festival.
Violinist Jenna Sherry is the artistic director of the newly formed Birdfoot Chamber Music Festival, and she couldn't be happier that her dream of celebrating this intimate music in her hometown is now a reality.
This festival has been 2 years in the planning and probably longer in gestation. 2 years ago, I started talking to friends here and colleagues I respected, and in particular, Dr. Fred Kushner, who's been a mentor for me since I was in high school, and just mentioned this idea to him. You know, someday, wouldn't it be cool to have a chamber music festival here? And he said that he'd been dreaming of something like this for a long time, and that was one of the pushes for me that made me think, well, yeah, maybe we could actually do this. And then we just started working on it, started talking to people and talking to musicians, talking to community members, audiences, writing grants, and 2 years later, here we are.
A viable chamber music festival, which borrows its name, Birdfoot, from the Mississippi River Delta.
When you look at it from above, it branches out and looks like a birdfoot. So it's a geological term that we've borrowed to tie ourselves to the river and the region.
Sherry says Birdfoot's mission is threefold.
There's that live music element of wanting to take this music out in the community, share it with the community, and bring in people who may or may not have much familiarity with chamber music, but know and love great live music. On the other side, I noticed that there were a lack of programs that gave young professionals a platform in the U.S. in general and in the music professional in general. And I started looking around and realizing that that was a niche we could fill. So I wanted to build a platform for these really talented emerging artists in a place where they would be really appreciated and could form connections with the community. The third facet was I wanted to build some opportunities for serious high school musicians in the community.
Several musicians will take to the stage in three concert venues around the city, including international artists such as
Danny Driver, who is well known and beloved by local audiences who mostly know him as a solo pianist. So in this festival, you'll get to hear him play in chamber ensembles. We also have a member of the Borromeo String Quartet, one of the most prominent string quartets in the U.S. right now, coming, Chris Tong, and Jonathan Chu, who is a violist in the Philadelphia Orchestra, who's also a violinist, and he's done all sorts of things. In fact, he even told me that he's on the rock band Vampire Weekend's last album. So he's done everything. So they're coming, and then we have 10 young professional emerging artists coming. And these are some of the most talented and exciting young musicians who are interested in chamber music of their generation, people who are in their late 20s, early 30s. So it's 13 musicians total to play chamber music, and these are really, in a way, fresh collaborations that have never happened before.
Tonight's festival concert opens in the new performance hall at the old U.S. Mint in the French Quarter at 400 Esplanade Avenue at 8 p.m.
This concert will feature three works, a Fauré piano quartet, a Britten string quartet, Britten's last quartet, in fact, a very special piece that he composed partly in Venice that's filled with kind of water and the character of Venice. And for me, that somehow really fits well in New Orleans. And then Brahms's piano quintet, which is just one of the best pieces of the chamber repertoire out there.
The festivities continue with a concert Friday at the Lowe's Piazza d'Italia, featuring works by Bartok, Brahms, and Dvorak. The party winds down with a gala celebration concert Saturday at Tulane University's Dixon Hall, with works by Beethoven, Dvorak, and Schumann. For more information, you can check the website birdfootcmf.org. WWNO is a media sponsor. Inside the Arts for 89.9 WWNO, I'm Diane Mack.
And that will do it for this edition of All Things New Orleans, WWNO's radio magazine. I'm Paul Mawson. Thanks for tuning in. You can catch the program online anytime at wwno.org. All Things New Orleans is a production of WWNO.